You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
We're doing our best to stay caffeinated thanks to a fun new horsey brand of coffee. Also this month, we're talking about our mental prep for the sport and how do we make the buying and selling process of horses more transparent and accessible for everyone. Thanks for tuning in.
From Heels Down Mag, a podcast where horse pros chat about what's happening in the horse world over drinks.
Welcome to Happy Hour. I'm Justine Griffin.
I'm Jessica Payne.
And I'm Ellie Wozniacka. Welcome to episode 139 of Heels Down Happy Hour.
Hey, guys.
Hey, guys.
Hello,
Happy August.
I can't believe it's August.
How?
It's like late August.
I know. I'm fine with it. Keep rolling. I hate August. Let's just keep rolling right through
Keep going through it.
It's
no,
too hot.
I'm ready.
For sure.
I don't know about you guys, but we have had like no rain. Like all my grass is brown. My horse's feet are hard as rocks.
Oh.
Yeah. It is not.
We've had so much rain. Like we're the opposite. We've had a ton of rain. Like more than thankfully we could handle it, but it has been a lot.
Ugh. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I would say
up here.
Ours has been like the normal, like, you know, afternoon quick thunderstorm, but it's just been the humidity is so high that it's like we're under constant heat advisories, which is just not fun. You're just you feel like you're swimming to breathe in the air in the afternoons, you know?
Yeah. We've been in the mid 90s, which is not normal for us, and like no afternoon rain to break it up. So it's just like, it's even been like 80 degrees when I put the horses out at 8 o'clock. It's awful.
Wow. Jeez. Well, this episode is brought to you by EcoGold. All right, guys, since we're going to talk about coffee a little later in the show, I figured I would have to come with a fun coffee centric cocktail for y'all this month.
I'm excited. Which
is a bit adventurous for me. Like I can drink the occasional espresso martini, you know what I mean? But that's like you have one tops.
Yeah.
You know
yeah,
what I mean?
For sure.
But this one sounds pretty good. So it's called an affogato. And here's everything you need to make it. You're going to need some Moscato. Let's see, some espresso coffee liqueur. Then there's a dark cream de cacao liqueur. Then actual real espresso coffee or your coffee of choice, freshly brewed and hot is what they recommend. Plus one scoop of vanilla ice cream. And then if you want to be fancy, you can get like three coffee beans that you're going to use to put on top of the glass when you're all done. But basically, you're going to blend all of these ingredients with three cubes of ice and then pour it into a chilled glass and then garnish with your coffee beans. And there, you know, because of the ice cream blended in there, it'll give it like a little bit of foamy up top.
It's so good.
Yeah, so it looks cute with the coffee beans. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, the last thing I ever want to do is combine coffee with like liquor. Like in the evenings, I'm always like, I don't know. I'm afraid to drink a coffee drink. But this one sounds delicious. I think the ice cream is what makes it for me.
Oh,
no, it sounds amazing. I can drink coffee at like 7 o'clock at night and go to sleep. So that's like right up my alley.
Wow. Yeah, you're that's pretty crazy. I could not do that. But yeah, it's a good one. I'm definitely bookmarking this one.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, 100%.
But Ellie, what do you got for news?
Yeah, so I know we've talked about her before, but Victoria Cloven actually won the Derby Finals for the fourth time, which puts her right up there with Tosh, who also had won it four times. But she's only the second person to do it. And the cool thing is she actually fell off in the warm-up. So it just was kind of a good, like, show of, you know, crap happens and you just keep going. And she ended up winning the entire thing. So it's just a cool way of showing, like, you just got to kind of push through. Everybody falls off.
Not everything's perfect.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah, no, the videos of her rounds, I mean, it's a gorgeous horse. It's just beautiful. I love watching a derby. It's just so it's such a fun course to watch. And the people who execute it well. It's been a minute since I've done the Hunters, but I really appreciate that still.
Oh, yeah. And it was a pretty animated course. Like there were lots of tighter turns and, you know, the bounces and things like that. So it was not an easy course. So kudos to her. And it was a good ride. And
yeah,
I love that
very
horse.
Cool. Definitely. Yeah, beautiful.
That Deco Blue. What have you guys got?
So I'm excited. I saw earlier this week that the CEO of Wellington International sent out like a big press release that they did so many improvements from 24 to 25. And then now they have even more upgrades for the 26 season. So they have increased the prize money. They have the redoing. They've got $1 million in prize money for some of the bigger classes. The 4-star qualifiers will go up in money. Some of the junior classes will go up in money. And they've been renovating the FEI barns. So I'm excited to see that. They've been doing a lot of the other barns. They're expanding the golf cart pass. They're putting in new bathrooms. They're doing facility updates for spectators as well. So I'm super excited to go down in January and see all the improvements they've done. So I'm super excited that, you know, with all the other venues going, it's kind of made everybody kind of keep up with the times and be like, okay, you can't just stay stagnant. That a lot of the big venues are putting in a lot of improvements. So it's exciting for the spectators and the riders.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited to see it. You know, obviously like WEF is a growing up in Florida, it's like where you've always gone. So it's really nice to go down there every winter and see like what's new and what's the latest. Yes. So
what do you have?
Oh, right. So I had a really exciting story. I don't know if you guys watched Orville over the weekend. It was the fourth leg of the FEI Eventing Nations Cup held in Belgium. It was really exciting, and it was a total nail-biting finish with the USA. They were in the lead in first place after cross-country day going into show jumping on the last day, which was very exciting because it was a relatively like young eventing team for America. Sadly, spoiler alert, we didn't win. Germany, womp womp, had like in some incredibly consistent performances in show jumping that helped them come out on top. But it was very cool. Like, I love when eventing, when it comes down to the wire like that, it makes the show jumping so much fun to watch. And then Team Australia claimed third place. But yeah, it was very cool to see the American team, like, again, a younger team kind of pull it all together. It was very cool. So here, let me find everyone's name. Team USA, it was Caroline, of course. She's the one. It's not a newer ride for her, but maybe a younger ride. Cassie Singer was riding Redfield Fry. Cosby Green, who I love, was on a horse named Clever Lewis. And then Laurel Nickerson, that we know very well, was on Larcott Z. So it was pretty cool. It was fun to see the Americans really fight it out to try to like really, really win. And there's nothing wrong with a second place finish.
No, those girls were great. They did a great job. You know, a couple of mistakes kept them out of the lead, but glad Lauren was able to win the whole event. So it was pretty impressive.
Yeah. So individually, Lauren won, which was, it feels like a long time coming. Good for her, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, but very exciting to watch. You can still find the replays of that if you guys have Clip My Horse or anything, but it was cool. It was very fun to watch.
So I think you guys got to try one of my favorite coffees. It's Happy Horse Coffee. So a client of ours, she's actually a surgeon. She decided they've done some coffee before. They've done dogs and everything else. And she came and she said, hey, we're going to start this like Happy Horse Coffee. And the labels are so cute. She's got all kinds of like fun little things. The Big Sticks blend, they've got super cute names. The Big Sticks blend is the caramel one. And that's actually Melissa and her horse Stella. And then the other fun one is a Cookie Crumble. And that's actually Doug and Star Witness. And they're of like cartoon characters on these.
Yeah.
Coffees. Yeah. So they're super cute. But I have to ask you guys, which one was your favorite or which ones have you tried?
So I just got it in the mail, Happy Horse Coffee, and I got a whole bean bag of Turn and Burn, which is their light roast.
That's a good one.
And I'm not going to lie, like when I opened the box, I could smell the beans through the bag already. Like that's how good they smell.
Well, and that's the thing is like each one is like specially like small, they small batch roast them in the Carolinas. So they're fresh. So everything, like they don't mass produce it. So we were like talking about it. I was like, oh, you should bring some to Aiken. And she's like, well, the nice thing about us is they're all small batch. So everything's so fresh. Even if it's ground, I do the whole beans as well, but then it's all small batched and directly shipped to you. So you get really fresh coffee.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I'm a little bit of a coffee snob, I'm not going to lie. So
I travel with my coffee maker. Let's get real. It's absolutely ridiculous.
That's pretty funny.
So, yeah, I travel with my espresso, like full coffee maker, because I love a whole bean. And so yeah. I'm not going to lie. I ordered from Melissa a bunch and then I was in a pinch and I was like, there was no coffee in my house. And we had a bunch of friends over and like people that had stayed and like, Melissa usually comes early. So this was about a month or two ago. And I was like, there's no way you have like a medium, a dark. I'll actually take whichever one. I don't even care. Do you have any coffee whole beans in your house? And she's like, I'll be there in 30 minutes. Yes, I'll bring you coffee. Aww, because every one of them is so good. Like we do the medium kind of on a daily basis, but I just ordered the cookie crumble because it's got Star Witness on it. So we had to try that one. I haven't tried it yet, but
that's I'm excited the one, for that one that I got in the mail.
Did you try? Did you like it?
So no big surprise that I would try, you know, the sweetest. Crumble. Yeah. And it's funny because Matt was like, oh, I'll try it too. And he can drink his coffee black. I cannot. He's like, oh my gosh, it tastes like Oreos. And it does. Like I'm terrible because coffee just is an excuse for me to feed my potential, you know, diabetes sugar later in life, because I like add like, you know, 4 packets of sugar and like 1/2 cup of milk. So I like it to look more like tea, but it was really good. I liked it a lot.
I have to try it. I'm still waiting for the medium roast to go down in the coffee maker, but then cookie crumble is next on our list.
The light roast is great. I've been really happy with it. I'm a whole bean snob too. Like I like to grind my coffee fresh before I put it in the coffee maker every day. Yeah. And it's lovely. It's super robust tasting, like lots of flavors. And the turn and burn, it's got a cute little like barrel racer cartoon on it. It's adorable.
You guys will have to go check out the website too, because it tells like a story behind a bunch of them and like about it and everything. So it's super cute. Like, and on their Instagram and Facebook, they kind of have like some backstories and like upgrades, because Stella, her name's Vivino, as a show horse, she does the 120s with Melissa, but she girl loves to sleep. And so Melissa loves to do these like memes or like things on it. Like this is Stella prior to coffee, and Stella probably needs some coffee to go in the ring. So it's super, super cute.
Aww, cool.
So you guys will have to check it out.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
No slipping, no sliding, no problem. EcoGold Secure Pads are engineered to keep the horse's back comfortable while keeping the saddle in place for a safe, competitive ride. They have impact protection through the seat, and the ultra-thin flaps provide the rider with a better communication and a more stable riding position. Available in both English and Western styles, shop the entire collection at ecogold.ca.
All right, everybody. I'm really excited to introduce our guest tonight. We have Adam Enger, who is the founder of Show Jump World. This startup grew out of Adam's love for horses and a desire to make the sport more transparent and accessible. Adam and I sat down a couple weeks ago, and he was explaining to me how his startup is getting up off the ground, and he showed me a sample report of what they do. And I am just incredibly impressed, and we're going to talk a whole lot more about this, but Adam has found a way to really take the data that we collect from our horse show results, whether that's, you know, USEF or wherever you compete, and use that in a useful way that you see in other sports. Like you see it every day in major sports, and how we use data analytics to make ourselves better, sharper, more competitive. But Adam also has found a way to use this data that can be helpful to people who want to buy and sell horses. So Adam, thank you for joining us. We're happy to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm super excited.
So why don't we start off? Tell me more about Show Jumping World, what it is, and what made you set out to want to create this platform?
Yeah, so it kind of started as more of a hobby more than anything. I started riding horses as a kid, and my parents are like, you got to pick horseback riding or hockey. And at the time, I was 7 or 8 years old, and I said, I think I want to be an NHL star one day. So, of course, my parents were fine with that, and I kind of went down that journey, and I played hockey for the next 17 years of my life. And you know, it was a random vacation, probably 3 years ago. My girlfriend had taken us to a resort that had horseback riding, and it was just kind of a casual trail ride. And, you know, the second I got back up on a horse, I realized just how much love I have for horses. And, you know, that stayed with me for a little while and didn't think about it much again. And then fast forward the next year, she realized how much I liked that gift, and we're out on another trail ride. So fast forward quickly, about 18 months ago, I got back into show jumping. It was very different from what I remember as a kid. And there was just a lot to navigate, a lot of different pieces with just kind of my, you know, my personal life, you know, working full time and finding kind of ways to really maximize my time in the saddle. And I really felt that growing up playing hockey, I always had a place to go back and look at my statistics or how I had done, you know, in a particular game or a particular tournament. But I didn't really have that per se so much in the show jumping world. You know, you can look at your ribbons, you can hear how, you know, people that have come to watch you or, you know, people from your show barn, how they say you're doing. But I really wanted some concrete data. So I kind of started to just play around with my own show results and kind of looked at ways to visually appeal to others and kind of realized that I was going down a path that really kind of started showing me that there was really an opportunity here for those that were buying and selling horses. Because I think a lot today, you know, it's kind of a two-pronged approach where the trainer's really helping an individual buy a horse, and then the individual themselves is getting on the back of one, two, three horses, right, at different horse shows around the country and kind of, oh, this is the right one for you. But I think at times a third set of data can be utilized to really see how that horse really would work in your type of showing, right? Where you're traveling to, what type of classes you're entering in from like a size perspective. And then just loving numbers really has got me just really super excited about what show jumping world can do and who all it can help in the sport.
Very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And as the daughter of a data scientist, I feel like I totally get what you're talking about. My mom actually did this for racehorses when she was doing her thesis for her master's degree. And I really liked how you went so in depth with the sample report on, you know, different footings and everything like that, like to really look into it. I feel like the analytics, right, are they're so important for, like you said, elite sports, but it still feels like a new phenomenon in horse sports. Why do you think that is?
I think our sport is moving so quickly, Ellie, that it's, you know, always on, you know, get back on the horse, right? That famous phrase we hear, that it's not so much focused on what happened in the ring as so much to where you should, like where you're going in the ring. And I think a lot of times we just kind of take a round or a class or even a circuit and we're just trying to almost get through it. That I don't think for some reason our sport really ever wants to look back. It's kind of always over the next fence and always on to the next class. And I don't know if we're necessarily doing a disservice to ourselves as riders, but I think there's a lot of value kind of taking a step back and almost looking backwards. I think kind of from my own just journey over the last 18 months, I mean, I wasn't even cantering 18 months ago, right? And, you know, going to where from there to where I am now, you know, even though you may not be ribboning or you may not be, you know, on the podium in every single class, you know, I've looked at just my own data and realized, okay, I'm competing at bigger venues, right? I'm showing in much larger classes. And I'm also able to, you know, do more classes in a given week than just one or two, right? And there's so much substantial growth there. That I don't think it's so much looking at ribbons for me personally. I think there's just so much value in seeing just how much I've grown just by taking a step back. And I think that's something that I really wish more people would do and really see, because I think we're hard on ourselves in the sport, right? I mean, it's you sometimes you're in classes of 60 to 100 people, right? Depending on the venue and the time of year. And there's only really six podium spots, right? But I think you can see that, oh, you're progressing so much more. You're, you know, showing in larger classes. I think there's a lot to that. And lastly, I'll say, even from a training perspective too, right? So that's another thing that I think, not saying we don't care for our horses or don't train them, but I think they're elite athletes. If you look at any other sport, take professional football, baseball, they all have a training plan and a rehab plan when they're coming back from off the road, or if they're training, you know, just locally at a, you know, they had a home game. But I think that that's something that we really can look at from the data perspective. But we're even tracking like how far these horses are traveling, the conditions that they're in from a weather perspective when they're on the road, the type of stalls they're in, to really creating a complex rehab program when they're returning back to their home barns, and any, and even like a training program for the riders themselves on how they're doing and where they're getting faults and where they're really needing to continue to improve from a prior show.
Absolutely. So we've talked about this sample report a lot. Can you do a walkthrough of us for what the performance report from Show Jumping World entails?
For sure. So right now we're really focused on our jumpers and hunters. We haven't really dived into dressage or eventing yet. But what we do is we take show results that are kind of just a compiled data, and then we analyze them in our own algorithms. And then we have an AI prompt that we run them again. So I won't bore us with all of the statistics. I think there's about 22 different data points we hit at a given reporting period, but we can look at the clear round percentage. We can look at the number of riders per class and the number of shows per week. That was actually something that was super interesting to us, because a lot of times when people are getting horses, they never usually think of a usage rate. They usually are like, oh, you know, this horse is, you know, a great Grand Prix horse, and, you know, a particular rider might have had it before me, and I'm going to continue to do it in the Grand Prix myself. But there's a lot of data in that usage rate, right? So if that horse is only used to showing in the night classes and they usually don't do the welcome, when you start adding in additional classes, even if it's just one class, we've seen strategically different percentages of clear as well as where they're placing. And it's just interesting when you start to look at that. And another really interesting metric is the gender of a rider and how susceptible that rider is at their average placement by heights when they're on the same exact horse. And I think there's a lot more to that. I just don't think it's, you know, male or female. I think it has a lot to do with if they're amateurs, if they're professionals, but there is a direct correlation to how well a horse is placing with a particular gender rider on their back. And then some other cool things that we do, especially from a sales perspective, another one I really like is usage rate over a period of time. So not just looking at how often that horse is shown in a particular class for a given week or a given circuit, but how long they're taking days off, right? So we're looking at it from a 42-day or greater period of time. We kind of had to find a number in there that worked for our algorithm so it could kind of calculate on its own. But we found within 42 days is generally a time period that either the horse might have a particular injury it's rehabbing, or for some reason they've taken that horse off the circuit for showing purposes. It's not a guarantee that anything's wrong with the horse. It could be completely healthy and fine, but it's just a data point to ask when you're kind of looking at two horses and you're saying, okay, this one has this break over greater than 45 days. Can you kind of explain to us why this horse hasn't been utilized over that period of time?
That's amazing. I love that. And then tell us a little bit, like, what is the goal for Show Jumping World? Like, it seems like it's not just for professionals. It's not just for people that are, you know, wanting to buy horses. Tell us kind of like what the goal is of it.
That's a great question, Jess. I think for me, it's to make the sport more transparent and fair, and also ensuring that the right rider and the right horse are in the ring together. I think a lot of times in this sport, and I can even say from my own perspective, you know, I think we're putting individuals in classes that are potentially too much for them from a height perspective. You know, maybe a junior rider should be in the lows and not the mediums or not the highs. And I don't think it's so much about, you know, getting a photo at the right time or seeing how high your horse can jump in a particular class, that there's so much more to horsemanship and the overall welfare of a horse. and using that data to really see how you really are excelling from a training perspective, right? So it's two pronged. The first prong is to really ensure that we're maximizing how we're training and how we're learning alongside our horse, and almost having that training plan built off of our previous experience on the last circuit. So when we come home, we have concrete data to why we're kind of looking at this training plan, because our reports also allow for videos to be embedded. So from the training point of view, right, we are essentially looking at ways to do highlight reel videos of particular jumps that you may have added a stride, or particular turnbacks where you may not have taken the best route. And you kind of have that video alongside the data, so when you get home, you can work on those pieces and kind of see how you're progressing. And then lastly, and I had been burned personally myself, I kind of had bought a horse on a whim without having a trainer really help me at the time. And I was told the horse could do something that it couldn't. Great learning opportunity for me. The horse is actually excelling now at the right height. But I think from a sales perspective, I think it's just a second data point for how expensive these horses are getting in the U.S., to making sure that whoever's buying this horse, if it's for themselves to continue riding up the levels, if it's for their child, that it's really the right horse for them, and that it's not just utilizing the trainer, it's not just utilizing the rider themselves, but you're really able to look at the data and say, okay, this horse really can take a person from the 60 centimeters up to the 130. They have experience in the same zones that we show in. It does well based on how much we travel as a show barn. This is a great fit. And lastly, to kind of bring home this point, is we can also compare two horses head to head. So if you're down to the last two horses you're wanting to buy, they feel completely the same. We can actually compare the data so you can see the number of starts they've had, how they do at particular heights. So you really can see a one-to-one relationship, and we can overlay video over that. Let's say the horses are showing in the same ring, right? You're up in Traverse City. We just got back from up there a couple weeks ago now. You know, and if you're trying a horse that's showing in the same ring, we can overlay those videos together and let you see how that particular horse is jumping to see if it meets your style. So it's kind of a combination. Make sure you're training the right way, and then also making sure that if you are buying or selling a horse, you have the entire picture all kind of brought together for you, where you're not having to go out there and hunt and peck and look for data.
No, I really like that idea. And it's probably very helpful too for people, the head-to-head, for wanting to compare, you know, what stallion to breed a mare to, you know, that sounds very helpful. So how does this work? Like, how are you compiling the data, and how is it pulled together in a user-friendly way for our non-techie listeners?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. So getting the data is still slightly a struggle for us. So everything that we have is kind of a proof of concept. We have tried working directly with USEF to get the data results from them. We don't have a direct connection yet. So what we're managing all of our data on is working directly with show management platforms to get the data. But what we've realized is that's kind of caused a roadblock for us, because it may not have all of the shows that that particular horse was on. Mm-hmm. So we've actually started building out a video analysis platform that can actually watch videos of horse shows and compile the results off of those to complete the reports for us. Because it's so important to me to really have transparency in the sport. We're wanting to make sure that everything about the horse is out there. And we've realized there's instances where particular people don't want all their data out there. So we're trying to kind of find a way to make sure that we're getting it correctly and accurately. So on the US side, we're still trying to find a single source of truth from the USEF. On the European side, we have partnerships over there that we can get all of the data from the European show records. But as we all know, that those records are so different over here that we're kind of having to piece it together from multiple different avenues, unfortunately, today.
Okay. So going into that a little more, are there ways for riders to, or even like trainers, to add like thoughts and specifics on how they thought rides went, or like what they want to improve, or even like what prep was used. Like, did they lunge the horse this day, or did they, you know, have to mute the horse after, you know, X amount of days of showing on the road?
You know, that's a great idea. That's something that we just started kind of playing with. So on our reports, we have a temperament trend, which essentially our AI analysis looks at the types of horse or classes the horse has been in and, you know, where they're jumping clean the most frequent. But we also want to have a manual entry of those temperament trends to kind of say, is this a schoolmaster horse or is this a green horse, right? And those pieces could be kind of entered in by the current rider or the current trainer, more preferably probably the current trainer, where they can add in those metrics. But I think the butte piece as well as the lunging is something that we hadn't really considered as a data point, but I think that could be something that's interesting there as well. We've been slightly cautious, I guess is a word I'd use, because the more and more we start adding things, it kind of immediately has kind of turned us into unknowingly a sales platform. Because we just, like, with our direct connection to Hipamundo, we have all of the pedigree information, right, for the horse all the way back to the mare line. So maybe we're slightly unknowingly kind of transitioning into some sort of sales platform, kind of with all this data we're starting to gather. But I think you're really onto something, because I think that, like, especially when a horse switches hands, those pieces are so crucial to know, and making sure that that's feasible, right? Like, when you move a horse that's used to being lunged, do you have someone that can do that now at your barn capacity wise?
Right. Yeah. Sorry. My nerd is showing, but I just think, like, especially from like an amateur perspective or from a perspective of older horses that need a little maintenance, right, to continue the job, that would be great information to know.
It really is. And it's super important. And I think the horses deserve to kind of have that information tied to them so that their next owners know exactly what they're getting into.
Definitely. So, Adam, is there one main takeaway, like, for our listeners who are tuning in and learning about show jumping world for the first time from this conversation? Is there one main takeaway that you'd like for them to kind of get out of what they're hearing, like the essence of what you're trying to accomplish with this platform?
Yeah, Jesse, that's great. I think for me, data is your friend, right? I think so many people are so concerned, like, what the numbers are going to say, and they really are cautious, especially even at my home barn here in Texas, to kind of see how they're doing. Numbers never paint the entire picture. They're always meant to be an additional piece of information, right? Like, how you feel out there on your horse and, you know, that 70 to 90 seconds that you're in the ring, no data can ever take away from what you've done and how you continue to progress. But I think having a chance to really see what the numbers tell you, either positively or negatively, can really enhance how you're riding and your horsemanship in general. And it really can point out things that you may not have realized that you're excelling at already today. And also simple things that, you know, maybe if you try this at home from a training perspective, you know, you'll easily move from the smalls to the mediums. My point, lastly, is data is your friend. I just don't want anyone to be scared of the data.
I think that's a great message for, like, where we are in today's world too, right? Like, AI sounds big and scary when you think about the things it can do, but it's also really useful, and it can give so many more people access to information that was hard to find if you didn't have access to platforms like this. So my last question for you, Adam, is where can people find more information about Show Jumping World if they want to dig in themselves?
Yeah, so if they go to our website, showjumpingworld.com, there are guides to our different reports to see what we have to offer. There's also a great Q&A on there for kind of where we're going from a show perspective to kind of what we're wanting to do in the next 3 to 4 months. But our website has a lot of great information, and you can kind of see sample reports. And there's great documentation out there for anyone that wants to learn more about us. And if you have specific questions, you can drop us a line there as well. And someone from our team would be more than happy to answer your questions or take any feedback you might have.
All right. Well, Adam, it's been great to have you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you all. Have a great Tuesday.
So I am excited to welcome the next guest, David Power. He's originally from Kilkenny, Ireland. He began riding at a young age and went on to join the prestigious Irish Army Equitation School in 2008. He spent a decade competing at the highest levels of the sport before relocating to the U.S. in 2018, where he worked alongside well-known Irish riders Richie Maloney and David Blake. By 2020, he transitions from competing to focusing on training and sales, channeling deep expertise into coaching emerging athletes. Welcome, David.
Hi, thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. So you had a successful career competing before you became a coach. What made you want to make the switch?
I suppose it was something that kind of happened naturally. And I suppose if you had have asked me 10, 12 years ago, it wasn't anywhere I saw myself going. And I suppose a little bit, when I worked with Richie and David, I spent time underground watching their horses and maybe had a little bit of input. And it's something I quite enjoyed. I suppose I did some coaching in the army, and then it was something, I suppose it was something I never planned, and it happened naturally. And I suppose I've never looked back. And to be honest, I probably enjoy it more than I enjoyed the competing. I think, I guess I always enjoyed the side of being prepared at home and being organized and ready to go to the shows nearly more than I enjoyed the competing side, if you want to put it that way. And I suppose I get the best. Yeah, I get the best of both worlds now. And yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't have planned it 10 years ago, to be honest, but it's actually something now I don't know why I didn't do sooner, if that makes sense.
No, I totally understand.
Yeah, again, like I said, it was just something that kind of happened slowly, then all of a sudden. And I suppose I was working with extremely good riders, and to stand on the ground and even give a small bit of input. And I suppose we especially with David Blake, we work very closely together, and I suppose we discuss things a lot. And I kind of maybe found more of a niche for myself on the ground and watching things and giving opinions. And I think when you work with a rider of Richie or David's caliber and you give feedback and they give feedback, I think it's beneficial for everyone. And I learn a lot, and I think maybe you can improve their thing. And I suppose at the time I was with David Blake, he had a very good horse, Kioki, and I think he was on a great run at the time. And sadly, COVID came, kind of struck down a lot of plans, but it was a very enjoyable time. And I think I got a bit of a buzz for being on the ground. And I suppose if you want to bring the competing side of it into it, from when I moved to America, I found it a little bit harder to have a horse for the higher up level of sport. And I kind of felt this kind of got me back in around the main ring, or the Saturday night or the Sunday afternoon. And I suppose, yeah, I took more enjoyment out of it again. It was different. I think to see someone else going well and not just myself, I think it's a little bit less selfish and you can focus on different things. And it's very enjoyable.
Well, and I don't know about you, but like, so, you know, I've ridden in the highest level for eventing, and then now obviously my husband show jumps as well. And it's kind of fun to, I get as nervous as I did in the ring, to be honest, when he goes in, because you don't have the control, but it's kind of a different thrill and you get to still bring a lot to the table. So yeah, I mean, 100%, I think a lot of people get to be those coaches and really enjoy it.
Absolutely. And I feel for myself, I've been quite lucky. I suppose I kind of wanted to go do more my own thing. And I suppose I was extremely lucky that me and David went our separate ways is too strong. I kind of said I wanted to do my own thing more separately, and that was good. And 2 days later, I got a phone call from Nicolette Hurt, who I've worked with for nearly 4 years. And that's been extremely rewarding. And I think she's grown a huge amount since I've met her, and we've grown a lot together. And I think it's really been fantastic for me as well. I suppose I met her, she was 22. She was relatively new to the East Coast. And now I think, you know, she has a full stable of horses, barn. It's really grown, and it's something that I'm very proud to be a part of. And we have a very good working relationship. It's been great. So I think along the way, and I would say it to a lot of people, I've been extremely lucky in so many phases in my career along the way, be it the army, be it even coming here to work with Richie, to work with David Blake at a great time, and then to meet Nicolette Hurt. And along the way, I've met so many great people that I'd say have really fed into my knowledge now. And I would say that I've been so lucky that I've had breaks like that. But back to the point, yeah, it's just working with good riders on a big night is amazing. You know what I mean? It's fantastic. Fun. Yeah. Yeah.
So we talk about on the podcast a lot the mental blocks that come with those big shows, right? What are the most common mental blocks that you're seeing in up-and-coming young riders right now?
I think it's still the same from when I rode myself. And yeah, it is. I think people are actually more worried about the competition going badly than actually having a bad result if that makes a mistake. They're more worried about the aftermath of how they will feel about the class not going well than actually worrying about the class going well, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So we ask a lot about this with everyone we have, the mental blocks in competing at those big shows. What are some of the mental blocks you're seeing in up-and-coming young riders? What do you do to, you know, personally center yourself before you go into the ring to compete?
I think the mental blocks you see now have been the same that I would have suffered from, or a lot of people I rode with would still have suffered from 10 years ago as they do now. I think people are more worried about the class not going to plan and how it'll feel afterwards. And like the fear of having a bad result is actually something that overtakes them, as opposed to worrying about the class. And I suppose the way I dealt with it, and anyone I help, I try to explain it this way, that for a month, 2 months, whatever way you want to put it, coming up to the class, everything we've done is to prepare for this. We are prepared, we've practiced, we've walked our course, everything's organized. The main reason we're doing this is we probably enjoy it. So this is where you get to show off all your hard work, your weeks, your early mornings, your late nights. This is going into the ring. This is where you get to show it off. So you enjoy it. You are never going to be more prepared than you are at that stage. So go in, show yourself off, and show everyone what you've spent the last X amount of time preparing for, and know that all the boxes have been ticked. You're ready to go. And that's the way I viewed it, and that's the way I try to put it across to people, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. I love that idea of just looking at it from you're prepared. You made it this far. You know, I love that.
Yeah. And it's just something that I believe in. And that's why I feel like we work very hard during the week. It's a strange sport. In any other sport, you might get 90 minutes or an hour. We might get 90 seconds in our main class. So all the time we put into preparation. But I think if you're comfortable in yourself and your team around you, that when you get to be at Saturday night or Sunday, your main class you're aiming for, you have everything organized, everything's prepared. You can't be any more prepared than you are. It's great. You're comfortable with that. You can be confident in that. I think it gives you confidence for the ring, and that you can trust on your training and your preparation, that it's just all going to go to plan. Maybe that's a little bit presumptuous, but I think it is. If you do that over and over again, you get confidence in your training during the week. You're confident, you're prepared, and just it makes things a lot easier, no?
Absolutely. What do they say? Consistency is key.
Exactly.
Are there any trends among young riders of this generation that you admire, or things that you're seeing that you don't like?
There's one thing I would admire, and I suppose, again, I didn't grow up in America or the American system, but it's something that a lot of people my generation, let's say from Ireland, would talk about. I think a lot of younger riders now actually look for help, look for lessons, look to be trained and want to learn. I would say all of us, when we were younger, okay, we didn't have the same access, but I think we a little bit found more so we kind of knew everything already when we obviously didn't. I think a lot of people, younger riders especially, are open to help. They want help. And I think we're in a great industry that if you do ask someone for help, they will give help, you know. And I like that. You see a lot of people will ask questions and want to learn, you know, which is great to see.
I think 100% this generation's all about the help, whereas our generation and a little bit older were kind of like, hey, we're good, we got it.
Yeah, and they're not afraid to ask for help. I think it was nearly seen as a sign of weakness when we were doing it. You wanted to prove, no, I know everything. Where now, it's great to see some younger riders that they will actually ask from your experience, and they'll listen and they'll want to learn. I think it's brilliant. You know, they're interested in learning, where you could also say they're more students of the sport, where I feel like my generation, we weren't as strong that wasn't a strong suit for us.
So David, think like kind of building on that, like let's make it forward looking now. What do you think, or what does the future of show jumping look like to you now that you're working with these young riders who are so eager to get better, right? Do you see any trends emerging for the future of the sport?
Yeah, I do. I think, again, a little bit more I see it with younger Irish riders, and I'm a little bit out of the picture there as I'm not based there anymore, but mm-hmm. I can see it here as well. I think the technical side of people's riding has improved a lot, and I think there's a focus on it. I think you can see a lot of the trainers around here are, and myself included, would focus on the technicality as that's the way the sport is going. It is more technical. There's a time allowed. There's distances. Like, you know, everything is just, it's technical. And I think that's, you can see riders working on that. I think the equitation system here is fantastic for that. And I see, I think that's, for years, American riders were very strong on that side. I think the rest of the world is beginning to catch up. I can see it in Ireland. There is a huge emphasis on training now. And okay, for me, it's a little bit the army system of training, which was Jerry Mullins, John Lettingham, and it carried on to the likes of some army riders who are here now, David O'Brien, who trains Chandler Meadows on the West Coast. They would be very strong in that system, be it canter poles, grids, flat work, but a lot of like the more technical elements. And I feel like that's something that is growing here as well. And I think it's a necessity. You know, you can jump a Grand Prix, and from fence 1 to 13 is all related. And that's something that's practiced here a lot. And I think that's very, very good. But that's the way I see the sport going. It's far more technical. You know, you can walk a number from 1 to 2, 3 to 4 and so on. And you can be, you know, you can have your plan set out for the whole course. But executing it, obviously, is a very different thing.
So, David, I think you're our first Irish rider to ever we've ever had on the podcast, which is very exciting.
Thank you.
Actually,
I know. It's kind of funny to think about that.
Did the rest say no?
No, you're the first one we asked, actually.
Yeah,
oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, I didn't feel think great. About that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But now that you spent a lot of time in America, like I think it's interesting to see how what you said, that like you're seeing like this, that American foundation in equitation kind of catch up in the training in other parts of the world. But how do you feel like America stacks up in show jumping right now? I mean, Kent Farrington is number one, right? Still in the world. But beyond that, how are we doing, I guess, compared to other European nations and even broader than that?
You can never criticize the American system, or you can, like, it's fantastic. You go to, I was in Michigan at the Major League last week, like the level of competition there is as high as most places you'll find in the world. You know, I think even I moved to America in 2018, I think the FEI side of things here has improved so much. I was just talking to someone about it the other day. I'm based in New York. Within 10 hours, there's 3 FEI shows nearly most weekend, 2 to 3. When I came here, there wasn't that many FEI shows at all. You can see that the level of competition. Okay, maybe the entries are not huge, but if there's 30 riders, there's 30 riders who are in contention for the class. I think,
and they're really,
I think the sport here, yeah, there's a lot of shows. Maybe they're a little bit quieter on entries than they would be in Europe, but I think that's growing every year. But I don't think going to a show here in at 2, 3-star, 4-star level, I don't think you're going to be top 6, top 10 too easily. I don't think it's in any way a give me. There's very good riders here, a lot of very good American riders. And then there's, of course, there's a lot of foreign riders here also. But the way the sport is going, I think it's getting bigger and bigger. I think there's the amount of FEI shows on the calendar is everywhere worldwide is growing and growing and growing. Stacking. Like, I just think back traditionally, when I see, like, obviously there was a lot of history with us in the army, and you look back and obviously we stayed close with the riders who went previously to us, and you talk about them in the 60s, 70s, 80s, they might have done 10 equivalent to 5-star shows a year. Now, you know, how many does for Kent to stay number one in the world or any top 10? Are they doing, they have to do 35, 40, and there's still other shows in between, you know? And I think that's a different in this, in the way the sport is going. I think it has to change our management, the size of strings of horses, the size of mm-hmm. everything like that. Take Kent, for example, as world number one. The Kent turns up to a show and wins week in, week out. Like, that doesn't
happen. Grail won this year alone.
Exactly. And but you think from the team behind him to the organization to the planning, like, that doesn't happen by accident. So no. You can say, how is the sport changing? For sure, there's fantastic riders in the world who can sit up on any horse and ride anything, but I think now you look at what makes a top rider, you look at any of the riders in the top 10, like we're saying, Ken, for example, is there anyone better in the world at being organized, like picking his shows for his horses, turning up, winning? It's nearly a different sport altogether. You have to admire it. And I think having your horses peak on the right days, picking the right classes, the right shows. Also, if you're at a show, the horses that are going to the show next week, who's organizing them, preparing them, it's a huge team effort. And I think that's where the sport has changed, and it seems to only be getting bigger. You can do a show 52 weeks of the year now, you know?
Right. There's no off weeks.
There's no off weeks. No. And that's where horsemanship and horse management comes into it, I think, now more so than ever.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Like, I think, and it's not that it's that long ago, but we used, I think,
December was dead. December and August, you didn't go anywhere.
You know, I remember in 2010, there was horses. We had five riders in the army. That year, we had horses went to the World Championships eventing. We had horses that jumped Nations Cups, Grand Prix, like five-star level. The middle of November, they all went out to field, I think 30 horses together,
pulled
and they came back.
Pulled their shoes out there.
And then they came back in mid-January, and then we hacked them out the roads and lunged them and got them going again to do a show around the start of March. And that's, now, is that right or wrong?
No, I don't know. You're dead on. That's what we did. And like everybody kicked out. I couldn't imagine pulling my five-star horse's shoes.
Putting 30 horses in the field together. Now you wouldn't put, if they can sniff each other in the paddock over the fence, you panic, you know?
You freak out if they walk fast in the paddock, but like they were kicked out for months.
Yeah, exactly. And look, it's changed, but that is not that long ago either. That's 14, 15 years ago. You know, it's not
long ago. 100%. No. I couldn't imagine pulling my five-star horse's shoes now. And like, even, you know, any part of five-star, or even like our younger ones, you just don't kick them out like they do. They still get vacation and it's part of the management, but it's a total different sport nowadays.
And for sure, look, I see it with the horses that I would have in my program. For example, we have some horses came back from Michigan, two older horses, and they don't do a show for a month. So for this whole week, for 2 weeks, we were lucky in New York, the facility we have hills, we have forests. They'll go out to hills and forests every day, just walk a little bit of trot and let everything settle down.
Yeah, give them a break, but you're not chucking them in a 30-acre field and seeing them in 6 weeks.
No, but I think, look, it's like anything. It's like any sport. I think it does modernize and it does evolve. And yeah, I think for now as well, also like the horsemanship side comes into it. I have a very good relationship with, I've used the same vet for years and I'm very close with him and his team, but I would have most of my horses checked over once a month. That doesn't mean they're getting anything done, but I'd be a big believer of prevention is better than the cure.
100%.
And that everything, and I think that's, you can get on a treadmill and a horse can go bad and then you don't know why it is and you go again and you go again and then suddenly there's actually an injury, where I think if you have a good team around you, I would say, whatever, I'm extremely lucky between grooms, managers, farriers, vets. I think I'm extremely lucky. I wouldn't swap any of mine for anyone in the world, but I think that's a huge part of the sport now. It takes an
entire village.
It is. And it is. You like keeping horses on the road, keeping them sound, fit, and then also keeping them performing. It's an art in itself. And I think that's, if you want to say on the trainer's side of things, it's no longer just training someone. I think you have to have oversight and of, obviously in like conjunction with the rider, but of the importance of that side of things, you know, the behind the scenes thing. And I work with very closely with Nicolette Hurt. That's something I feel like I've taught her a lot about and that she's embraced very well and is now almost an expert herself in it, because it's, you know, horses need to be sound, they need to be performing, and we can get on a treadmill, you can go jump 12 weeks a row in WEF and not think anything of it, but are you going to watch it? Like the summer doesn't, or the summer starts straight away 2 weeks later, you know? It's not as if
a break.
They don't reset, and horses don't reset on the 31st of December and go again, you know? So it's about planning and everything. Yeah. So, and like we said, how is the sport changing? Well, I think like we see it's harder and harder to find a top horse. I don't think there's less horses. I just think before, if you had three good horses, it was a great string. Now six good horses is nearly not enough, you know?
Yep. 100%.
And with the amount of shows, and then also if you have six horses, the amount of staff you need, the amount of everything grows. So yeah, I think it's a massively growing industry, but to find top horses is virtually impossible. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
So I have one more question. What is your favorite part of coaching or being part of the program that you have produced?
My favorite part, and maybe this is a little bit specific, I love getting a new horse. And I love, obviously, when you buy a horse, you think it's everything, but I love improving a new horse. And that doesn't necessarily mean one we've just purchased, one that we've, that is new to me. Yeah. I love watching it improve. I love figuring out. I love getting inside their head. I love riding it, then getting whoever I'm training to ride it and working and thinking about it. That's my favorite part. How can I improve the horse? Personally, for me, that's the most rewarding part, improving the horse and then obviously in turn improving the rider. But I still maybe am a bit of a show jumper at heart. I kind of think about how can I improve the horse first? And then I think, how can I teach the rider to improve the horse? That's kind of the mentality I approach from. And I think, again, not to harp on about it, but when I look at a horse, if you put a horse in front of me today, of course, I think, how can the rider ride it better? But I also think, how behind the scenes can we change it? Can we change its feed? Can we physio, veterinary, shoeing, its work program? Is it out the paddock enough? Does it suit to be worked first thing in the morning, or is it better out to paddock to be worked? I love figuring those things out. Yeah.
Oh, that, like, fun. I'm smiling hearing you say that. I love to hear that, and just your passion for it. That's absolutely, that's the best answer, David.
I look, it's not that I'm saying like of you know, I love competitions and I love results, but I think they are the last 10% of what we do. You know, like when a new horse comes into my program, I'm extremely against, even if it's a new horse we've just imported and everyone's excited to be in a rush with it. I want to have it a month before I go to a show. I want to know what's ins and outs. I want to, with Nikki Hertz, main groom, for example, Charlotte Dickin, I work very close with her, but she has such passion for the horse. She's second to none, but the way she thinks about the feeding and when we, like, we discuss it a lot. Like, if we work the horse for a night class, is it better to work them at 9 a.m. and they have the day relax, maybe get a little lunge, or is it better they work at 4 p.m. in the afternoon and they get work? I love figuring those things out. It's a bit like a puzzle to me. And I think, I suppose, the reward is when it all clicks and you get a good result. That's still the bit I love, to be honest. And look, I'm very lucky, and I never thought I'd say this, and I suppose it's only even recently I've appreciated, I love standing in the ring teaching somebody. I love one-on-one trying to improve somebody in a horse. I actually never thought I would enjoy it as much as I do, but I really, really do. Working with good riders who want to work, and I think it's good. And even little things, and friends of mine just standing there, if you're at the schooling ring and you talk to them and you say, hey, did you ever try this, or vice versa. I'm very lucky. I've a lot of close friends of mine who would say, hey, did you ever try this? And I'm like, oh, you know, maybe frustrated I didn't think of it myself, but I'm like, that's a great idea. And, you know, I like that side of it still.
I love the part that everybody does want to talk about it and be like, hey, have you ever tried that? Like, and everybody does try to help it out, which is refreshing and everything else.
I would say that from my experience anyway.
Yeah.
If you walk up to any rider, Kent, McLean, any of the top riders, 100%. And you ask them a question, I think they're more than generous with their time and their answers, and they appreciate it.
100% agree.
And I think that's an unbelievable compliment to our sport. And to be honest, I would notice it more so in America, that the top level riders are very open to help. If you actually ask them a genuine question, they couldn't be more helpful, and you would appreciate that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
refreshing to hear. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're super super sweet about it. Yeah,
yeah, it is. And look, I think this is, again, my view on it, but a lot of them are a lot of kids' idols, and I think they actually respect that, and they appreciate that, you know. And they, I would say that about most any top rider in the world. If you ask them something, they're above and beyond to help. And also, with look, I like I said, along the way, I don't come from a horsey background. I've been extremely lucky, and like, with the riders I rode with in the army who went above and beyond to help me, because I wanted help. And I think that's the biggest thing. If you go look for help, it's there in abundance. You know, if someone came to me and said, hey, listen, could you help me figure this out? Of course, I come over to the farm, come on, we'll try to do something. Of course, you know, that's, and I think that's kind of the essence of not expecting anything massive in return. But I think that's where there's a lot of goodwill in this industry, and it's something to be proud of.
Yeah, I love to hear that. So, yep. David, if our listeners have enjoyed this conversation and want to follow more of what you do, where can they find you?
Well, I'm not very technical as we try to set up this podcast, but yeah, I do. I've great. Four Oaks do my social media, and they kind of manage that side of things for me more so because I am not very good at that kind of thing. Instagram is still a little. You saw that email is about the extent of my ability on a computer, but yeah, they can find it on that and reach out to me through that way. And that's the look that's the way I have it. But look, I'm sure plenty of people know who I am. If they need my number, they can get it that way or ask. You can find me that way. It's under DPGP training.
Okay.
And a lot of people ask what that is. It doesn't stand for Grand Prix. It's actually, I was christened with two middle names. It's David Patrick Jared Power. And I actually made the logo and I didn't actually realize that it said DPGP. And then people are like, is that David Power Grand Prix? And it's like, no, that was accidental.
I like that.
Yeah. Well,
they could find you at a horse show and walk up and say hello.
For sure. I'm at all WEF. Walk up and say hello. I'll be friendly. And like I said, it's I can be helpful or guide them in the right direction or see if I can be any help to them whatsoever, of course.
I love that. Well, David, it's been awesome having you on the show. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Each holiday season, we publish the Heels Down Holiday Gift Guide, highlighting our favorite equestrian products of the year. From riding apparel to tack, horse care items, nutrition, and more, anything that makes a difference in the lives of our favorite horses is eligible to make the annual collection. Items that make thoughtful gifts for horse trainers, barn managers, barn besties, and more are also on our radar. Want to work together? Send us an email at justine@heelsdownmedia.com. So it's that time. It's Rose and Thorn. Guys, I think I have to go first because I spent the last trip we did right before the kids start school and everything is we took a trip up to Canada to see some of our good friends. They've been asking us to come and we went totally off the grid and it was one of the coolest experiences we had. It was probably one of my favorite trips. Like nothing worked, like no phones, no nothing. It was amazing. We were on this lake and the kids went tubing and fishing and they had the biggest slip and slide. Oh my goodness. And the kids like swam in the lake and it was so much fun. Like that will probably be my rose for the entire year.
Aw, that sounds amazing. I'm so glad you had a good time.
It was so fun. And I was like not ready for summer to end. And I was like, oh yeah, I mean, I don't need the kids to go back to school. Like we're just having the best summer until about last week. And that's my thorn. I was like, school hasn't started yet.
It turned one day.
I was like, not ready for him to go back to school. And then I was like, oh no, I think it's time for school. I think we need to get back in the routine and we need to get going. And because all my friends' kids had started school and they'd been in school for like 2 or 3 weeks. And our kids are just starting school this week. So like, I was like, I think it's time. So that's my thorn is that everybody else's kids went to school early and I wasn't ready, but now I'm ready.
You're funny. That's funny. Ellie, what about you? What's your rose and thorn?
Oh boy. So I'll start with my thorn because it is related to my rose. I have to take you down a journey.
Oh boy. Buckle up.
So it's just a story that, you know, is typical of my life at this point. So my roses at my sister's horses have moved in.
Notice that, by the way, low key in your posts. Yeah.
Yes. So they moved in. So they live here now, which is really cool. And I'm back to a full barn, which I don't know why I thought would be a good idea, but I'm really happy they're here and like they're a good addition and everybody's settled and stuff. So that is my rose. My thorn is it was a journey to bring them here. So it's like 5 hours with a trailer from my house to Connecticut. So I left in like the middle of the day and then like 3 hours in, I was like, huh, that's weird. Like I've had to turn up my audiobook like 3 times while I'm driving. It's kind of strange.
Oh no.
And then my steering kind of went. And I was like, huh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It started freezing up. Like it was like really hard to turn the wheel. And I was like, okay, so this is going downhill fast. And so I called my mom, but at this point, my truck is like sounding like a dually. It is not. So it is really rumbling. Like I can't even hear my mom over the speaker. Yeah, I'm like driving behind the 18-wheelers with my hazards on. Luckily, the trailer was empty because this was going to go pick them up. But I was like, man, if I crash and ruin this trailer, I'm going to be pissed. Like I was just so, I was not happy. So luckily, I made it to my mom's house, unhooked the trailer, and then immediately, this was a Sunday, so I immediately took my truck to my childhood friend's dad's shop. So shout out to Lemoore's in Connecticut. Oh my goodness. Thank you for being open on a Sunday, because I just drove that puppy there. Yeah, so that was like, you know, an $800-something fix that I was not looking to do. But also thank you to, luckily, Lauren and her boyfriend drove up from Florida because they wanted to make like a road trip out of it. And luckily, he also has the same exact truck because my truck had to stay for like a week for them to get parts in Connecticut. So he drove the horses back.
Oh, no.
He's very sweet, though.
Yeah, because he has a CDL and everything. So it was perfect out of all the people to like be there. I was like, great. Good idea. And then God bless my mother, because a week later she drove my truck here. So I didn't have to go get it. Then she got a rental car to go back home.
Oh my goodness.
So yeah. So, I mean, I did not make any money trucking those horses because I didn't even truck them. I trucked halfway there and then spent money to fix my truck. So, but they're here and it didn't happen. It happened when the trailer was empty. So there was no better way for that to happen. But, you know, such is life, you know.
But how are they doing now that they're moved in?
Good. Yeah, they're doing good. Her horse has her meter 20 gelding. He has realized he has a way more room to run. So he's already pulled a shoe and he's wearing bell boots outside now. I said, and her 25-year-old appendix mare that she grew up doing that, like the hunters and the pre-children's and stuff on, and the children's act. She like runs every night with him, and it's really cute because they just are so excited to just run around. And my mare is very happy and also angry to have another mare in the barn. So they communicate to each other pretty much all day. There's lots of noises going on, but it's fun and everybody seems to be happy. So I'm excited.
Wow. Cool. So what's she doing? Like, why did you take her horses in?
Because board in Connecticut is ridiculously expensive.
I believe it.
So the place where she was boarding is now $1,350 a horse.
My gosh.
I mean, that's pretty much what I pay. So, you know, I feel like that's the going rate, you know.
That's crazy to me because when I grew up in Connecticut, right, like it started in like – when I moved out, so that was 2018, we were at like $725, I think.
Yeah, those days are long gone, but yeah. I know.
So she said, I would much rather pay you because I charge her, drum roll please, $600 a horse. So
you're just feeding it, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I think she's much happier with it. And then also it took a load off my mom because my mom had been taking care of them. In addition to her own horse.
She's not riding right now, right? Because she's down in Florida.
Yeah, she's down in Florida right now. So she comes up sporadically. But I think the goal is that if we get her mare attached to my mare, that then she can take the gelding down to Florida. But they're really attached right now. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't want to bring a 26-year-old horse down who has never dealt with that kind of heat.
No.
She doesn't want to bring her down there. That's not fair to her.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I mean, I'm not upset about having them here. She was like, yeah, you can ride them. And I was like, Lauren, I barely have time to ride my own, but I will totally take her up on that at some point. But I'm excited to hopefully have her come here. You know, we can ride together and
yeah.
So it'll be fun.
That is exciting.
What about you, Justine?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I'm in a weird conundrum.
Is good or bad?
it's kind of like Ellie's story. It's all connected that I don't even know. So, you know, Mikey had a really great winter and spring season, and we qualified for things, and those things are now like on the horizon. Like if I want to go to USDF regionals, that's the first week of October. That's like less than 6 weeks away, guys. Like that's kind of like kind of soon. Oh, I need to have a plan. Like my horse should probably work a little bit, right? You know, so I'm trying to decide, like, you know, entries are due here in like in early September. So I'm trying to decide, like, how do I want to go? And if I want to go, like, how committed am I going to be?
Yeah.
Actually, Michelle Jess from Auburn, she's trying to get me to go to regionals with her and go stay at her house at the farm for like a week, and then we'll go together. And I was like, that sounds amazing. But
yeah,
it's just, you know, it's a commitment to do that.
But and it's reality. Like, can I miss that much work? Can I like actually do all
right? And it's also like, you know, after Mikey showed at Terra Nova in May, like it got really freaking hot. So it's not like I'm working him that much. It's crazy. I'm just trying to keep him sweating and like keep him moving. So like I have to put fitness on him to be like, you know, if I'm going to spend the money on an entry like that, like I would right. like to do okay. You know what I mean? Like we've got to get yeah. back into a fitness routine. So we were out of town. We were in North Carolina last month. And when we got back, I was like, all right, I'm going to try to put him back into work and just, he will tell me if he can't do this in the heat because it's hot. It's crazy hot. It's like trying to figure out what works best for him. But he's sweating great. Like knock on wood, crossing all my fingers and toes, maybe sacrificing something to keep him sweating, like whatever it takes, you know, he's doing great, but it's going to take a little while knowing that it's so hot and he's not a good sweater to get the fitness on him. I'm just doing lots of short but frequent rides. Like he gets like one day off right now, and that some days we ride for 20 minutes and that's it, but he's just got to start moving. And so far, knock on wood, everything is going in the right direction. He's feeling pretty good. He's looking pretty good. He's still sweating. He's recovering well in the heat, but I just have to like pay like an entry by the end of the month, you know, like it's the first week of September. Oh. I got to pay the entry. I got to book a hotel. I got to like decide if I'm doing this. I went and got my trailer serviced. You know what I mean? Like, because it's, I'm either going to Georgia for regionals, or he also qualified for TIP, which is the Thoroughbred Incentive Programs Championships.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's the same week, so I have to pick one. But TIP is at Stableview in Aiken, and just being in Aiken in October sounds delightful. So regionals is at Conyers, Georgia. I've never been there. I was kind of like, I don't know. I asked Jess, like, I should go to Aiken, right? That sounds like the more fun week to do.
Aiken would be more fun than Conyers, but Conyers isn't bad.
I know. And it would be a more legitimate show for sure. But given the fact that I'm trying to get my horse fit in the worst time of the year, and there's exactly. probably going to be at least two hurricanes that I have to plan around from now until then. And, you know, I feel like the pressure is less.
Aiken would be more fun. And yeah, and Aiken would be fun. You can go to the restaurants. You can go to town.
Right. Like, and, you know, we'll ride a couple dressage tests. Like, I don't feel like, you know, regionals will be stressful.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to, like, we've talked about this. Like, USDF dressage is like not. Like, come hang out and have a good time. It's pretty
exactly
intense.
No.
So, like, the thoroughbred people have a good time. They really do. I've done TIP Champs before through the, like, when it was hosted at the Makeover. It's a lot of fun. So, that is what I'm leaning towards. But again, I gotta pay that bill. It's still, you know, a big horse show bill.
Still there.
And then I've got to commit to doing all that. So that is my rose and thorn. Poor Mikey is like, okay. So that I'm pulling him out every day and he's got to do something. Today I just lunged him for 20 minutes because it's hot.
But he's been looking good. I've been watching your videos.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, he feels good. So, you know, all things are pointing toward like, if nothing, there's no like disaster in the next 2 weeks, I think I'm going to commit. We're going to go.
Do it.
So we're like, we're going to Ocala this weekend. There's a little schooling show. It's hot here. It's hot in Ocala. I feel like it doesn't make a difference whether I ride at home or, you know what I mean? Like, it's good to start getting them back in the mindset of like getting off property and being around other horses and being in the show environment. And then we're doing a clinic the following weekend. So like just trying to like pad the calendar from now until then and keep building the fitness and just see what we got. That is my rose and my thorn. Cause man, it is like, it's so easy to get lulled into, like, he's like, are you done? Cause I'm done, you know, like 15 minutes. And right. I'm like, okay, I could feel you, you know, like I get lulled into that. And then I Pivo every ride. Cause that just kind of helps me right now. And then I watch the video and I'm like, oh my God, I'm letting him like talk me into doing nothing. You know what I mean? Like, I've got to work harder than this if we're going to be ready. So finding that motivation is hard, but
they're good at it.
Okay. Right. He's like, I've done enough. Right. Like, come on. And I'm like, oh, okay, sure. And then, yeah, then you watch the video back and you're like, Jesus Christ. All right.
Berkeley always right? just looks out the door. Like, don't you want to just walk outside instead? And I'm like, Yeah, we walk truck cannered, you know, that's good enough. Check my watch. I'm like, oh, it's been 15 minutes and now we're trail riding. I'm like, well, okay.
Exactly. I know. Like on the Pivo, I'm like, I've been riding for a half an hour and the Pivo's like, it's been 18 minutes.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where I'm at right now. But the thorn is, I feel very grateful that I even am in this position, that my horse is sound, that he's sweating, absolutely, that it's the middle of August and he's doing that well, that I can plan for something like this. It's all good things. So I really shouldn't complain that there's a heat advisory every damn day for eternity is what it feels like. But I just sort of like, I go to the barn. He's turned out, like after breakfast, he immediately goes out. And then I just sort of like wait for the stray thunderstorm to roll in. And that's when I bring him in and tack up and we try to ride while there's cloud cover for as quickly as we can. That's pretty much it. That's what we're doing. But it brings the temperature down like very fast, like when that storm rolls in. So it is nice. I feel like I don't have to kick as much for my 18 minute ride, you know?
Yeah.
So that's my rose and thorn. But okay, we do have a mailbag. This was an email we got from Lacey. She was asking for best tips on keeping your feet dry during the rainy season. So this is sort of like the opposite season probably for you, Ellie, like in winter when you get muddy and like your feet are cold, but also wet. I feel like for Jess and I in the South, like when it's muddy, it's really hot. And the last thing I would want would be like an insulated pair of boots. Yeah. Like I need something that's going to just like keep my feet dry and all the way through. So, but Lacey was asking like from the pastures to like having to ride in the rain occasionally, or even in the wash rack, like how do you keep your feet dry and not disgusting and not overheat at the barn? Do you have like a magic pair of boots, Jess, or do you have any tips? I mean, my only tips are I just bring extra pair of socks. So like I'll ride.
So actually we use this stuff called Sure Hoof.
Okay. Oh, wait, are you talking about horses' feet? They're talking about riding feet.
People feet.
People yeah. feet. Sure Hoof is good though.
Oh, this thing. Oh, so they're talking about people feet?
Yes. I don't really have a good pair, like a good boot product for my own feet. All I say is like being in Florida, changing from like my tall boots into muck boots, I always bring an extra pair of socks because like on the drive home from the barn, I don't want to still have wet feet. So I always put dry socks on in the car to go home. But to Jess, you know, you're in the South too. Do you have any suggestions or what do you do?
Yeah. So, okay. The tall boots, everything great, but the muck boots get so hot and like my feet sweat in them.
I hate them. So, I know.
They're gross. So even if I like, so I wear a compression sock, like as a, like a tall sock, I find like I have these black compression socks off Amazon or whatever. Those are my tall boot socks. Like I put them on and then, so they're pretty like wicking dry. Mm-hmm. I'll take my tall boots off and I'll put my waterproof sneakers on and then I'll work. And most of the time they stay dry enough. And I mean, I have honestly have two pairs of them. So I swap them off because if they get wet, I just wash them off and let them dry. And then I know this is going to be like total, like not supposed to wear a flip flop, but as soon as I'm done with the horses and stuff, if I'm cleaning tack or whatever, just to let my feet dry, just like the rainbow, like flip flops, to be honest. And I'm not near a horse or anything, but like your feet end up just so gross. So as soon as like they're wet, I like let them dry. And I honestly, I find like a vent, like we have like air conditioning vents and I stick my shoes on that. Like I'll rinse them out, scrub them with some Dawn soap and then stick them on the air conditioning vent.
Okay. I like that. But I like the idea of just wearing flip-flops. What about you, Ellie? I mean, you get all seasons, so maybe you have...
I have a lot of boots. So I mean, I'm a big like dry shod person for like the winter, but same thing. My feet just instant sweat in those. So I actually went when I was in New Mexico. One of the ladies that I was hanging out with from New Zealand actually had on a pair of Dublin, like the venture boots, the ankle boots.
Okay.
And I was like, man, are those like comfortable? I haven't like, you know, I'm like, they've been around forever, right? I swear by them now.
Okay.
So right. I have the Dublin venture boots. They're like three. They have like a riding style one that's more narrow. Like the venture ones that I have are a little wide in the foot. But personally, I like that for when I'm just like, they have more grip and stuff too, which is nice when I'm turning horses out and things like that. But they're great for not getting water. And I like that they're like ankle height. So it's great for these like drier weather. However, I have already purchased my river boots that are like the mid calf or like a little higher, maybe boots for when the mud kicks in, because they're going to have the same, like kind of, it's like the oil skin fabric, like for all the like Aussie, like jackets and stuff. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, I like them. They're super like breathable and I think they're super comfortable. So I'm excited to have those for when it starts to get muddy. Like I said, we need rain, so I would be okay with a little mud. So
that you could definitely tell you haven't had enough, because I'm like, please, no more.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there are some suggestions for you guys. And if you have any good summer, warm weather, muddy, wet condition ideas for socks or boots, or like the way you keep your feet from becoming, you know, swamp feet.
You could always foot.
Exactly, like, ugh, don't want to smell it. Please share them in our Facebook group, which is the Heels Down Happy Hour Podcast Lounge. We always have lots of fun discussions there. And if you have a mailbag, a question you want us to answer on the air, you can always send us an email at justine@heelsdownmedia.com, or you could post in that Facebook group. But if you want to hear more from us, check out heelsdownmag.com for the latest news, and follow us online at heelsdownhappyhour on Instagram and at heelsdownmag on Facebook and TikTok. And if you love our show, please give us a rate and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We want to say thank you to our sponsor this month, Eco Gold. All right, guys, that's a wrap.
Cheers.
Cheers.